Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And my friends, I hope you've been enjoying this content that we've been, I'll just say, trickling down and feeding you all of this information. These are fundamental principles, and I'm hoping today that we wind through the Enlightenment, the natural law, the concepts of republicanism, and get into the concepts of our electoral college and how all of these things are aligned and are all based on how our framers, with the insight of the divine hand of providence, has helped us protect the minority, has helped us protect. And today the minority is that moral minority. We're no longer a moral majority. When you have less than 50%, based on Pew Research, when you have less than 50% of the population attending church, recognizing Christ, recognizing a God or creator, period, we have turned a very sad turn. And so they gave us a system to protect the minority, to protect all of us. And so that's why what I'm talking about today is so critical, is so important. What we've been talking about over the past week, the past several days, several weeks, we have been going through the ratification debates, giving you the terms and conditions of the Constitution and the contract. We're going through these concepts of individual sovereignty and the scale of liberty into natural law, like I said. Now, instead of recapping all of this, these are all building upon these premises so that you understand what you need to do to help us take back our constitutional republic. That's why this is the only show that provides you with the necessary knowledge to help you get involved, to help you become a part of that 3%, 7%, a part of that real ultra minority in moving the fundamental change necessary. We don't need to have thugs out in the street violating the Constitution in doing protests. Protests out in the street are violations of our Constitution. You think otherwise? Let me know. Send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and I'll be happy to help you understand what our constitutional rights are in protesting government. If you read the First Amendment, it's right there. You have a right to address your grievances with government. It doesn't say in the public square. What that means is you're supposed to go and address your grievances with government directly. And they knew this, and this is why they have you out in the streets and have everybody doing marches, because the people without jobs are going to be willing. They're full-time activists, practically. Most of these leftist kids out of school that don't have a job, they're looking for opportunities to go up the ranks of power instead of even getting a job. That's how you have Bernie Sanders and people like that. I mean, as I talked about in the last show, we in enlightenment, in our phase of enlightenment, an evolutionary enlightenment coming into American enlightenment, the whole thought of what Locke was doing in challenging the divine right of a monarch and basically asserting that we have the right of people to dictate who will represent us and creating positive law and positive government. Those types of governments, positive law and government, are governments and laws that actually protect the rights of the people. The concepts of rights of the people goes all the way back to the Magna Carta and the Glorious Revolution. If you understand these principles and concepts as we're going through them, the lights should just be getting brighter and brighter in your head, that you start to go, oh my goodness, we have wandered so far beyond that concepts that the framers had given us and had built and instilled this constitutional republic. The listen number, for those of you who cannot stream this entire show, 605-562-4209. I also want to let you know that if you cannot even listen to the entire show, don't forget about the podcast out there on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Just write down the days you missed. Just write down and go, you know what, I got to listen to these. Because each of these shows, from the ratification debates, I mean, when I'm in my marketing mode, when I'm just talking about the news and just, you know, turning around and saying, okay, you see all this craziness happening, what's it going to take for you to get active and get involved? What is it going to take for you to become a part of the solution instead of ignoring this and being a part of the problem? I mean, in those marketing phases, I get it. You know, that's all ephemeral. That's all temporary information, temporary events, temporary things that are happening. They do not have any permanency other than the fact that, you know, people die or something like that. Those are permanent changes. But the only thing that is truly permanent in our lives are amendments to our Constitution and or putting aside the Constitution. Everything else is just, it's just waves in the ocean. We still have a bedrock. We still have a foundation, and that foundation is our Constitution. So again, the listen number is 605-562-4209. Now, we are going to get into Madison's essay on property, because I want to pound it into everybody's head that you have rights in your property and property in your rights. And when you realize these concepts, it'll be a lot harder for those who are ruling you, those who want to be your government, it'll be a lot harder for them to steal your property, to steal your sovereignty, to steal your government. And that's what they've been doing. They've been getting away with it, and it's time to wake up. The other thing we want to get into coming up in some of our future episodes is the rescinding of the 17th Amendment. I will probably take a break and do a little bit of marketing, but these are two really big, important pieces to this puzzle of how we need to move forward and the importance of republic review, that the people of the states, and actually the leaders of the states, it doesn't require a mass majority of protests or anything like that. All we need to do is get our people to lead, and we'll get into that whole concept of that, because in the initial process, the framers put into the Constitution this oath of office, right? And everybody raises their arm to the square and says, I will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in some states even more, protect, defend, and obey the Constitution. That's not enough anymore. We don't hold people accountable to their oaths because there's no legality to that, because there's some ambiguity. That is why pledges of resignation are necessary. You have to have your politician sign a pledge that they will resign if they violate the Constitution. We'll get into that a little bit more as we get beyond some of these things, but I want you to put this into your paradigm, that when a person signs a document that says that they will resign if they have violated the party platform, they violated, you know, to egregiously violate it and will allow the conscience of the party and the people, and actually it has to be the party, because when a politician is elected, are they just elected, you know, representing the people, or are they representing the party? Because the people are voting based on not the person. 9 times out of 10, you don't even know that person that well. Whoever your congressional representative is, you don't know them. But you do know the party and what they supposedly stand for. So the party is a much bigger element or much bigger factor in this entire process. That's why in my latest briefings, I talk about the elephant in the room, which is the party. And it's a little play on words, but the fact of the matter is the party is a big part of the problem, because the party is not protecting its brand. When you get somebody like McCain that has no resemblance of the party platform and the people that make up that party, then as far as I'm concerned, he should never have been allowed to run as a Republican. Never. He was a communist. This guy was a servant of Mammon and those who kept him at the trough of power. And so, you know, we need to remember, McCain needs to become the household name of all things that are bad in government and so forth. He was the worst representative that I can think of in modern days of a Republican. And I don't care. Same thing with the Bushes. I do not care anymore about these elitists that are tarnishing the principles of republicanism. We need to take back this brand. But there are other things we need to get into. But I want you to know that if you want to support this show, you can go and buy Red State Coffee by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org, and you can order yourself either grinds or whole beans. You can also support us by going to GoFundMe and look for Reclaiming the Republic, or go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and just follow the links. Both of those ways are ways you can help us support our financial needs in moving this effort forward. It costs money for me to travel to reach out and get with these folks, state legislators, party leaders, and or local leadership. So we need your help. More importantly, we need you to get involved. That's why I do the marketing. That's why I'm trying to give you all of this information so that you have the epiphany and go, I get it. I completely understand what needs to be done. So with that, we want to move really quickly forward, but we're at a hard break. So when we come back, we're going to kind of summarize a little bit of where we were and what we need to talk about regarding republicanism and moving in towards the Electoral College and so forth. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so as we kind of look forward in our upcoming episodes, we'll also try to highlight some of the local areas Constitution Day plans. So if you've got plans, if you're doing anything or you know of anything, you want to point us in that direction. Because what we'd like to do is I'd like to get to a point where I need just 1 hour alone to talk about what is going on in creating constitutional awareness. I would love to have a second hour in this show that is talking about what is going on at local levels. How many car dealerships in the different states that are actually giving away the Constitution for Constitution Day. We need to make and we need to help grow the importance and awareness of the Constitution in our everyday lives. And it's by getting people to start thinking, oh, it's Constitution Day. Well, why is that more important than Independence Day? Independence was just the first step of moving us towards anarchy, moving us towards ineptness. The Constitution was where we actualized our true independence and our sovereignty. If anybody wants to really look at the difference in importance that that Constitution has compared to our Declaration of Independence, Declaration of Independence is just a cornerstone in our foundation. It is not the majority of our foundation. The majority of our foundation is the Constitution and those ratification debates. So with that, let me just kind of plow forward because that's what's important here. And so we've already talked, and again, just highlighting really quick, this whole concept of enlightenment, that we as a phase of enlightenment started recognizing the divine rights of kings as an archaic and a very despotic paradigm throughout society, that we raised above that, that we the people could create social contracts, positive law, and positive government that would be protecting us, the people, both protecting our lives as well as our property. Those are the two primary objects of government, is to protect life and property. And when you have government taking property from some and giving to others, then what you have is you have government that is despotic and using communism and all sorts of other evil principles in governing. And so the concept of classical republicanism was also a part of enlightenment and how we challenge the paradigm of natural rights, because natural rights is the antithesis of inalienable rights. Natural rights means that the Obamas and the Clintons and maybe some pogue in your state, in your county, like Hunters down in California, Duncan Hunter and now his son, or the O'Donnells or the O'Days or who was it in Chicago? I forget the family name. And there's families all around in different states that seem to be the monarchies of those areas. Those kinds of things are the antithesis of American republicanism and government. And how did we get back into this whole thing of kings and princes and so forth? My point is, my friends, that enlightenment moved us well beyond this. We understand a confederation. We understand a federation. And we understand the general government and how it is supposed to be serving either a federation and or a confederation. So we understand that there are definitely conflicts when you have a general government supporting a federation because it is supporting the growth of its own powers. The framers were very well aware of this. I'm trying to talk too fast and I'm getting ahead of myself. But the framers were very well aware of these problems. That's why they created, it's not a complicated system, but they created a system with so many balances and checks that it would make it very hard for us to actually slide under tyrannical rule. But it has been a long road of deceit and lies since the 1800s to today to get the point where the federal government is now reigning over us with tyranny and arbitrary rule. As you understand these whole principles, you have to start understanding the fundamental definition of American republicanism, because American republicanism has been lost. This goes back, and like I said, the House of Lords, the House of Commons, all of these concepts of representation in other governments was never the concept of bicameral legislative bodies. If you understand why America has bicameral legislative bodies, then you can start understanding what the heck we have in American republicanism, because American republicanism was representatives of the sovereigns. We recognize that the people weren't the only sovereigns around, that we actually created by our own accord, by our own agreement, we created sub-sovereigns, or I should say sovereigns at the local level, state level, and so forth. And American republicanism ensures that some of the legislative or sovereignty in a legislative body ensures the protection of those sovereigns as well as the sovereigns of the people, to ensure that there's some checks and balances so that we don't, because they understood the dangers of the people of being manipulated and it becoming a mob rule and voting for food for everybody and voting for free healthcare, free education, because that's what happens in the Alexander Teitler or whatever his name is that made up this cycle of democracy, that about every 200 years we swing from liberty to complete anarchy and then despotism. And so if you understand these models, the framers understood that model as well. And that's why they gave us a system that protected us. And the reason all of these things have been lost, the reasons we're fighting for, we have to move into a revolutionary state, is because our education system has been indoctrinating all of us into believing that we are a democracy, that every vote counts, that it's we the people. No, we have a much more enlightened government. We have a positive government. We have positive laws that both have checks and balances in protecting us. And so my challenge has been in trying to get state representatives and or local representatives to understand the Constitution, getting you to understand this and bringing them forth and bringing them to the table of committing to the Constitution. Technically, when they raise their arms to the square, they have just done that. And that's why we've talked about pledges before. A pledge of resignation has to be integral in this process of taking ownership of your party, taking ownership of your representatives. They are required by the supreme law of the land that they must take an oath. They must raise their arm to the square and swear that they will defend and support the Constitution. And then as soon as they get in office, they do all sorts of things that violate it. And I am sick and tired of hearing conservatives puff up their chests and say, I'm the most constitutional, I'm the most conservative person in all of the House of Legislation. I am dealing with that in the Dakotas as well as every state, even in Idaho. I even had somebody sign my pledge in Idaho that said that I'm going to support the Constitution, I'm going to do these things, and he didn't. And so that's why in our next evolution of these pledges will be a pledge of resignation. That if you say you're going to support the Constitution and you don't, then I'm sorry, my friend, you have to go. We need to start replacing these people with people that actually understand that they are taking an oath. They are obligated to support those things that they swear the fact that they will. If they don't, they're committing moral perjury and they should be banished from public service. Even these conservatives should be banished. I mean, they're just as bad. You know, what degree of evil or violations are acceptable? 1 degree, 30 degrees, 50 degrees, 100 degrees? If you look at the progressives, they're in the hundreds of degrees. Hundreds of degrees, if not thousands of degrees, because the progressives are trampling all over the Constitution. But even our conservatives, even if it's 1 degree, it should not be acceptable when they're violating the Constitution. That is tantamount to treason. Moral perjury means something, and that's why Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was included. We can no longer allow our public servants to commit moral perjury. That's how our society, that's how we've been just, they're running rickshaw over us because we're not holding them accountable. Remember, liberty is dependent on three fundamental factors: free agency, responsibility, and accountability. if you're not going to hold people responsible and make them accountable for what they're doing, then you are going to have them all do all sorts of things to their own advantage, create elitism, and then start oppressing you. That is the natural tendency. We have systems to help us, but our morals have slid away. And that's why everybody's heads in their hands going, oh my gosh, why? How did we get here? Because we're not holding them accountable. We need to have them sign pledges of resignation. That oath should have been enough. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment should have been enough to actually purge them, remove them from office, and ban them. Now we have to step into the legal form of you got to put your John Hancock on the line and say, if you violate the Constitution in any way, you will resign. It's that simple, folks. So when we come back, we will move a little bit further down this road so that we can hopefully get to the American Republicanism and the Electoral College and how we have been completely subverted and why our presidents and selections are not representative of the people anymore. So we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
You know, I think I have said this a few times before. I do not understand conservatism. And I've said this, I think, in the past couple of days. I don't know what conservative is. By definition, conservative is keeping things the way they are. If you want to conserve something, you want to keep it in that state. Do you really want to keep America in this state of despotism and oppression? Is that really the best thing for America? I don't think so. And as far as I'm concerned, what we need to be doing is we need to be restoring republicanism, not conservatism. Conservatism is what the John Birch Society supports. Conservatism is what the Republican establishment supposedly supports. That's what they champion, supposedly. But the reality is that they're actually out there moving us towards socialism by maintaining the status quo and allowing things to progress in the directions that they are. The directions of socialism. That's how we've gotten this far down this path. And supposedly these organizations like the John Birch Society, when you look at what they're championing, they say that they're the champions against communism. But we're so close to communism today, they've been failing. So if you understand republicanism, this is where we need to be moving back to. Republicanism is failing, and as a matter of fact, every state in the union is violating the concepts of American republicanism as defined and required in Article 4 of Section 4 of the Constitution. So Article 4, Section 4 states this, that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Now you got to understand that our republican form of government took a new turn when we started representing the sovereigns. We no longer represent the House of Commons. We no longer represent, actually, the House of Commons is the House of Representatives. So we do have representation for you, that we the people, all of us common folk. In Britain, they have the House of Lords. Those are the elitists, representations for those who have affluence and protecting them. No. We don't. It's, why don't we just have a house of corporations and protect the bankers and corporations? No, what we have is we have a sovereign that we call the sub-elements of government. In the federal or national level, that sub-element are the states, and they are sovereigns. In the states, we have counties and local governments, and the counties are the sovereigns because where do you, when you have to vote, who does it? It's your county that is the seat of government that controls and manages the voting process. Just same thing with the traffic laws, same thing with the public utilities and infrastructures. We have a sub-element of government in our republican forms of states. But these are nuances today because everybody has been moved into the paradigm of democracy. The boundaries are still there, but they've become so blurred that people have completely forgotten that these states are republics, that counties are the sub-elements within these republics, and that these states were framed just the same as the national government was framed. That's why we have bicameral legislative bodies in all of the states, well, except for one that decided, well, we don't have to do this. And that's Nebraska. But if you look at the colonies, not all of the colonies were bicameral legislative bodies. But after the Constitution, they modeled their state government. The problem is that they never really defined what they were doing. And they didn't literally create like desktop procedures and processes and manuals of this is what you have to do. It was just common knowledge and they just did it. But they didn't document it very well. That's how we've been able to be perverted and subverted, and that's how we've been convinced and hoodwinked to allow our states to become democracies. That is why counties are no longer represented in the state legislative body in the Senate. It's counties because all apportionment is done by population today instead of recognizing the two sovereigns. The two sovereigns are the sub-elements of government as well as the people. And you want to make sure that the county, the people of the county are represented. We absolutely were given, we were blessed with a system that actually protected the minority from the mob. Now, almost every state that has a coastal line, you'll find that there's a big city that's along that water that is the primary city of the state. Chicago on the inland waters, right? If you look at who has these ports, because that's how we moved commerce. That's why Seattle and Portland and the big cities of San Francisco, LA, San Diego, all of these big cities are port cities. Their interests are a lot different than the mountain cities, the agriculture, or I should say the mountain counties and the agricultural counties. But by apportioning representation, they've been able to steal the representation of all these other counties because, hey, it's we the people in a democracy, an apportionment by the people. That was the principle that was completely rejected by the framers in the Constitutional Convention. We could not get any type of an accord amongst the states until the Connecticut or the Sherman Compromise was tabled and said, this is how we can do this. So states have their equal representation and protection in the Senate, and the people have their protection and their responsibilities in the House. And that's why they divvied up the roles the way they did. The things that affect the people was granted to the House of Representatives. The things that would affect the states the most adversely, like treaties and those types of things, were granted and blessed to the states. These men were brilliant in being able to see this. And today it's we take it, and we have taken it for granted for so long that we have been bamboozled into believing that we're a democracy and we want apportionment by the people instead of by the sovereigns. When I say by the sovereigns, it doesn't eliminate the people. It recognizes that there are other elements that are sovereign, that we, the people, have created. We've created counties. We've created cities. Our city councils are our sovereigns. Our county commissioners are our sovereigns, just like our state legislatures are our sovereigns. And we have allowed the principles of democracy to literally put us to the brink of destruction. So understanding republicanism is going to be very critical in moving forward as we start performing republic review and start restoring our republican form of government. In a nutshell, American republicanism is recognizing two sovereigns. It's the people in the national level and the states. And at the state level, it is the people and the counties, or I should say the counties and the people in those counties. The Constitution guarantees that the people will be represented in the state governments by having a minimum of at least one representative in the House of Representatives. Well, Wyoming doesn't even have anywhere close to 750,000 people, but they still are guaranteed one representative. This is one of the reasons why I'm a huge fan of Madison's amendment that the good people at our first right are trying to get out into the states to ratify, because that would force every 50,000 people would be guaranteed a representative. Now, there are still counties out there that would not be represented because there are some counties that have less than 20,000 people. But in Congress, that's nothing. But at the state, counties must be represented. And in American republicanism, we have to represent the county boundaries and the people that live within those counties, as well as the county sovereigns themselves, who should have say over what the heck is going on in that state legislative body. So that's why we have bicameral legislative bodies. And if you understand the Electoral College, that is why the states are granted a certain amount of Electoral College votes, and it is all predicated upon your congressional representation. In other words, how many representatives do you have in the House? And then every state has two senators. So we have to start understanding representation and that Electoral College. And when you start looking at Article 2 of the Constitution and the 12th Amendment, you will recognize that there's no allowance for party primaries. There's no allowance for the parties to dictate and the people of the parties to dictate who's going to be the ticket. Because that's where shenanigans come in. And we're far better off in getting an electoral college that is actually freed once again to represent the people and to vote for who they believe is the best. We need to get rid of the tickets, because if you understand anything about the tickets, the vice presidents have always been political compromises between the party bosses or what have you, instead of representations by the people. We need to move back towards the people taking control of the Electoral College. We're out of time on this, so when we come back, I'm going to get into the details on the Electoral College and what we need to be doing with that. So please stay tuned, and we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so the Electoral College is how we elect our presidents, but I want you to really think about this whole point of representation. You are supposed to have representation. The fundamental concept of democracy is that your vote actually counts. And in our system of representation, your congressional district is your representative. And so in our current system, the parties and the state legislatures have literally stolen your representation. Because what they have done is, by a majority vote, by mob rule, almost every state hands over the controls of the Electoral College to the party, to the winning party for the presidential election. So what I want to do is have you go look at the details of the 2012 election. There is no way Obama would have been elected if we would have followed the Republican principles, because Congress was truly elected by, or I should say, the majority of Congress were representatives of the Republican Party. Had the Electoral College been tied to the congressional districts, then you would have found that the House of Representatives would have given more Electoral College votes to the Republican electors in the states than it would have been the Democratic electors. And if they created this, if they actually protected, not created, if they protected representative of your choice, your voice, then every single congressional district that was for a Republican in the 2012 election would have been a Republican elector that you, the Republican Party of your electoral, or I should say congressional district, would have chosen. Currently, the system is that the states are actually defining who their Electoral College is. Now, it's fine if the House of Representatives, you only have one congressional district, like in Wyoming, they only have one congressional district, so the state should be able to vote for who that elector would be. But if you have multiple electors, the people or the party of those congressional districts need to determine who would be their elector. It is not representative if the person that is selected as the elector of that congressional district, such as a good example, because I understand this very well in Washington State, the inland 5th Congressional District, which is the easternmost edge of Washington State, and the elector that is selected by the party in the state convention would be somebody from Seattle or the West Side. Well, that's not representative. That person should be selected and should be a representative and part of that congressional district. Can you be a member of the House of Representatives and run for office if you don't live in that congressional district? These whole concepts of the Electoral College have, you know, completely defied logic based on the fundamental principles of our system. We need to start demanding republicanism. Now, if we start looking at, you know, who represents our congressional districts, it should be somebody that represents the party that won that congressional district. If you do the math, you would have saw that Romney would have been president and we would have been relieved. We would have been freed from the encumbrance of another Obama administration. Now, it may not mean that we would have Trump today, but I'm telling you, Romney would have been far better than Obama. Romney would have been far better. And as a matter of fact, I look back at the McCain-Obama presidency and I go, or, you know, the two candidacies. And in actuality, we may not have had Romney because under the principles of republicanism, the party doesn't get to choose at a national level who is going to be forced down our throats. Anybody that goes into the pool of representing the people could actually vote for a solid Republican conservative, or I should say constitutionalist, because a conservative is a bad name as far as I'm concerned. Keeping things the way they are is a bad thing. We need to start moving for the reclaiming, the restoring of our republicanism and our republican values that the framers instilled in our system. Now, when we start looking at the Senate and how the Senate plays out, if you understand that we are protected from the mob rule, then why is it that the senators go by whoever wins the state by 50% plus one? There needs to be a supermajority to ensure in the popular vote for the Electoral College, and we're strictly talking Electoral College, there needs to be a popular vote for a 75% threshold, I mean, on the popular vote. So in other words, if you do not have 75% of the congressional districts that are won by a single party, like in California, then both, and if you do have that, you beat that 75% threshold, three-fourths, because in our system, three-fourths is the magical line that makes amendments to the Constitution. That is considered the supermajority, not two-thirds, three-fourths. So if you have a state that has chosen three-fourths of their congressional districts being Democrat or Republican, then the two senators are to be, you know, handed to that majority. In other words, the party gets both seats if it's three-fourths or greater. If it's less than that, then it gets divided so that each electoral college would have both a Democrat and a Republican. I want you to go do the math. Go look at how you would divide those two electoral college votes and how you would win back the electoral college of all of the red counties, the red states, and so forth. You would actually find that there would be far less people voting for communists as president and communists in office if people started understanding these principles and voting and applying the selection of our president this way. I'm telling you, Romney would have won. I'm telling you that we would not have as many Democratic presidents as we've been getting, especially since they've reared their heads as the champions for communism. The Democratic Party is the party of throughout the world, the Labor Party is the Communist Party, except here in America. The Labor Party is the Democratic Party. Why? Because communism still has a bad connotation in America. That's a fact. And so they don't want to call themselves communists. They'll say, oh, well, they're starting to proudly call themselves socialists. Why? Why is it that they're coming out of the closet and saying, I'm more of a socialist? Socialism's good. Because it's the happy face of communism. And the happy face of communism has been sold and indoctrinated into our children through the education system for so long, starting in the 40s, the 1940s, they have been teaching collectivism. Even G. Edward Griffin, even my parents understood collectivism because that's what they were taught, and they were taught these principles that went even back to the 1880s when government started embracing collectivism. And until they could gain control of the education system, they couldn't move us in the direction they needed to. And now they've got us on steroids, and they've got us on the fast track of surrendering our liberties. That is why we need to understand republicanism, and we need to understand and start applying these principles in the republic review process, because we will start in doing so. We will start actually moving forward in restoring our constitutional republic. So here's the question. Do you live in a county that is underrepresented? You shouldn't. You should not be sharing your representation with other counties. There should be a guarantee, and there are guarantees that ensure each county has a minimum of one representative in your state legislatures. Apportionment is not regarding the population alone. It has to include the geographical and or sub-element protections as well, because those are American principles. We need to protect the minorities. Each county must have a minimum of one representative in their state legislature, just as well as the Senate should be made up of the selections from the county commissioners. Just like the Senate should be made up of the selection of the state legislatures per the Constitution until the 17th Amendment. That's why we're going to be getting into the rescission of the 17th Amendment in the next few episodes when we get to this point. This is why the Constitution requires 3/4 of a majority to approve amendments or to make major changes. These are all tenets that are rearing their head. It's the DNA of our principles of protecting the minority. Why is it that the states are allowing the population centers to dictate to the rest of the counties of how they're to live? I'm here to tell you, my friends, progressives do not care about the minorities. They are all about mob rule. I believe the framers knew this. There's no doubt. They even talked about this. If you read these fundamental documents, the ratification debates and these other documents that these great men wrote and in their letters and so forth, you'll see how well they understood this. And this is why they gave us a system that actually had an edict that all states must be Republican in form to the American definition of republicanism. Identifying representations of the sovereigns, not just the people. We're not a democracy. We're not a mob rule. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless, and we'll be back in the next episode to take this further down the road for you. And we'll be getting into some marketing with all the latest bad news. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake.
send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.